Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It is the Brad Sesmat Show here on a Wednesday, and if you couldn't notice, I'm not Brad Sesmat, and if you thought I was, you obviously haven't watched the show very much. But Brad is actually out. It's a management decision, as they're trying to gain some extra ping pong balls here. So like any good tank, you bring in the backup, and I will be playing Tyler Ulis to Brad Sesmat's Eric Bledsoe today. Actually, Brad is out sick. Welcome. I am Greg Esposito. Glad to be here with you today, and plenty to talk about. We're going to talk Cardinals, what Bruce Arians had to say about his team at the NFL owners meetings. We're also going to talk some Suns, and we're going to sit down with the head athletic director, the vice president of athletics for Grand Canyon University, Mike Vaught, here on the program. Before we hop into it, I had to bring in my friend E. Eric Sorensen behind the glass. I got to know, E., exactly how many people did you have to go down the list before you decided on me to fill in for Brad today?
Let's see, two.
Two?
Yeah, you were the second call I made.
See, I was thinking Jeff Munn, Jody Jackson, Paula Bovin.
Nope.
I was thinking you probably went 15 deep before you got to me in your panic last night.
No, but to be honest with you, Espo, you're one of the few people that wouldn't be offensive if I sent you a text at 9:49 last night, which I did, true story. Because I don't know if you can tell in my voice, but the flu has been going around our company, and it hit Brad apparently last night at around 8 o'clock. Because all day yesterday, I thought he would be here this morning, and then I got that text. I was just about to go to bed myself, and so I wouldn't say I went into full panic mode, but you got that text like, hey, I know you'd be doing me a huge favor if you could please dot, dot, dot. You've gotten those before.
Two things. I was actually asleep when you sent me the text.
Oh, well, I apologize.
My newborn woke me up, and I saw it, so you're lucky. You should thank
my 5-month-old. Well, you would have gotten back to me at 2 or 3 in the morning.
I probably would
have. When Roe woke up anyway,
and you probably would have went 15 deep already. And
it's true.
You would have been hosting the show yourself.
Nobody wants that.
And then, two, did somebody wash this mic? Because I can't afford to get the flu with it.
I think you're okay. I think you're okay.
All right. Well, let's hop into it. We mentioned at the top of the show that Bruce Arians spoke today at the NFL owners' meetings, and he brought up some interesting topics. First one I want to get into is he said Andre Ellington is actually going to play wide receiver this year, and I'm not sure what I think about this. 2 years ago, he was the Cardinals' leading rusher. Last year, he was the backup to David Johnson. And now I understand there's not going to be a lot of carries for any running back on this roster with David Johnson playing in as well as he did last year and scoring at will like he did. But Andre Ellington is 5'8". And a 185 soaking wet. I can't imagine this guy is going to be able to go up against some of the best physical cornerbacks in the NFL as a true option at wide receiver for this Cardinals team. If this is their Michael Floyd replacement plan, I think we've got some issues if you're a Cardinals fan. I know they've got Jerron Brown and Smoke and all the guys that they have on their roster currently that play wide receiver, but this seems just like a curious move to me. I don't see him being able to hold up at the wide receiver position, and really why he was such a good receiver out of the backfield is you don't expect a running back to catch the ball as often or go out and line up as a wide receiver. So I think the element of surprise was part of what made Andre Ellington a credible receiver out of the backfield. But when you make him a full-time wide receiver and teams can game plan for him from the wide receiver position, I just don't see him being an impact player there for the Cardinals. It makes me wonder, what exactly are they thinking? And it kind of transitions into another comment that BA brought up, that he thinks the wide receiver group is fine and, quote, a top pick isn't necessary there for the Cardinals. You lose Michael Floyd. Larry Fitzgerald's another year older. He's 34. You can't expect him to continue to put up the production that he has. John Brown is coming off of injury and different health issues from last year. Jerron Brown, health issues as well. I think there's a lot of question marks at wide receiver, and I full well expected them in the first two rounds to at least consider drafting a receiver. It seems very curious to me. I don't think Andre Ellington is going to be your answer at wide receiver with the gaps you have.
I would think, Espo, knowing Bruce Arians as we do, Ellington is going to be a situational player. And it wouldn't surprise me to see him at times line up at running back, even though technically he is listed as a wide receiver. They want to get him the ball in space, and you mentioned it before. He was, when healthy, so versatile because he could catch the ball, but now teams will be focusing on him. I guess, I mean, the Cardinals are loaded now with small wide receivers. Jerron Brown's like 6'1". Smoke is probably 5'11", maybe 6 feet. Ellington's not big. You mentioned Larry Fitzgerald. He's their big possession wide receiver, but he is a year older. And even more stunning than Ellington moving positions, I think, is what BA said this morning about a top pick isn't necessary. What do we know about Bruce Arians? He loves to throw the ball down the field. They need a deep threat. Smoke has been great when healthy, but who knows if he's going to return back to his form 2 years ago as a rookie. And I don't know if this is the time of year where you see smoke screens.
No pun intended.
Exactly. About a month before the draft, BA could be saying one thing, and inside the Cardinals facilities, there could be something completely different going on.
Well, it certainly could be subterfuge, but you mentioned how small their wide receivers are, and I want to throw something out. I think they should give a look at Anquan Boldin.
Bring him back in.
We all know that this is the last hurrah. Let's be honest. Next year, Carson Palmer's probably going to retire. Larry Fitzgerald's going to consider it. That Super Bowl window is closing. So why not bring in a guy who admittedly is on the back half of his career in Anquan Boldin, but give him one last run, let him potentially retire as a Cardinal, and add a piece that actually could help that receiver core. I think he's the kind of guy that, sure, maybe they don't draft a guy at that position, but maybe you bring in a guy like Anquan Boldin that could have an impact, because look, they did it with Carlos Dansby. They brought him back. They're very veteran heavy. This isn't a young up and coming team like the other teams in Phoenix. This is a team that's pushing all their chips in and saying, look, we understand this is our chance, so let's try to add pieces. I think Anquan could fit that.
And I think Q would also bring a completely different element to the locker room. When you're talking about Jerron Brown and Smoke and some of these other young wide receivers, this is a guy, I mean, Anquan Boldin played at Sun Devil Stadium. Like, think about how old Anquan Boldin is, and talk about the ultimate pro, a guy that plays with the chip on his shoulder and has. But I think he still, Espo, has some football left in him because he's been smart, taking care of his body. And I agree with you. I'd love to see them give him a shot.
He had a heck of a year in Detroit last year. And the thing is, last year, sometimes this team lost focus. They didn't exactly play with that intensity that Anquan Boldin could bring. I think he could be a great locker room guy and a great attitude guy for this team. Another thing to look at that BA said was he wants to get David Johnson 30 touches this year per game at running back.
Hmm.
Now, when he's basically your entire offense, I completely agree. I assume that was a consternation that you were
you see it time and time again with running backs. It used to be 30 was the magical age that running backs hit the wall. Now it's more like 29, even 28. You're seeing these guys just run out of gas. David Johnson is an incredible football player, an extraordinary athlete, but if you don't have to use him, why use him? And why say, oh yeah, I think his workload is going to be fine. Just keep that guy off the field if you can at all costs, if he is not needed on the field.
Well, look, there's two things that bother me about this. One, it's what you're saying, the wear and tear that you're going to put on a guy. And it makes me wonder, how much are they all in this year? No, I feel like if you're going to put that kind of wear and tear on David Johnson, you're admitting we don't care what his future necessarily looks like. We need his present to be MVP worthy again, and we need to ride him to a playoff appearance. And if we have Super Bowl hopes, he's going to have to play top notch, and we're going to have to do that. The other thing, I think it may be Bruce Arians saying, we don't really have a backup right now, which makes the Andre Ellington move a little peculiar to me, because it seems like Kerwin Williams is your backup at this point. Now, Chris Johnson is still out there. Heard some rumblings that they're still potentially interested in him. But at this point, it may be completely out of desperation that you ride David Johnson like that, because you don't have anybody else that's truly going to be your backup running back there.
Two case studies on overused running backs, Sean Alexander and LaDainian Tomlinson. Two guys, especially Sean Alexander, but these guys started out and they were such bell cows in the offense. And with LT, he didn't lose it quite as fast as Sean Alexander did, but it's just amazing. You see these guys and they hit a wall because of all the, it's not just them running the ball, it's them blocking, all the responsibilities that running backs have. I just hate to see David Johnson, such a promising young running back, fall into that same category.
But look, for the Cardinals and for management, it's not about what's good for David Johnson's long term. It's what's good for the team.
Oh,
and
like
winning.
You said, the window is small. I mean, let's be honest. It's what we thought was a 3-4 year window last year got exposed. Maybe the window is a lot shorter than we thought it was.
I would argue it may actually even be closed now. This may be a lot of desperation for a team that doesn't necessarily have it left in the tank. What we saw last year,
and a lot of it depends on the health of number three and the production
of
number three.
But the problem is the receiving core took a hit. The defense has taken a hit. Yeah, they brought in Antoine Bethea and they brought in Carlos Dansby, and those are guys that
good players.
Bruce Arians is sitting there saying these guys aren't one and dones. They've got long term. You know, Carlos Dansby is 2 years older than I am. He's 35. I don't think he has a lot left in the tank. And if he had so much left in the tank, I don't know why they let him go to Cleveland in the first place. But Bethea is a guy a little bit younger. I think he does have a chance to have an impact. One other mention that these Cardinals actually have solidified their right guard position as well as a how do you say Evan's last name?
Bame.
Bame. All right. Not how it's spelled at all.
It's not Boheme.
And my producer, of course, didn't spell it out phonetically for the guy that he called in a frantic pace last night to fill in last minute. But lots more to come up here on a Wednesday edition of the Brad Sastmatt Show. Obviously, as I mentioned, I am not Brad Sastmatt. I am Greg Esposito, columnist here at Sports 360 AZ and host of the Suns Solar Panel podcast, also here on Sports 360 AZ. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Suns and Thanksgiving as the tank rolls on. They're getting closer to the Lakers. We'll talk more about it after the break. It's the Brad Sastmatt Show here on Sports 360 AZ and azcentralsports.com. Welcome back. It is a Wednesday edition. If I could speak, it's a Wednesday edition of the Brad Sastmatt Show here on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports. I am Greg Esposito, columnist here on Sports 360 AZ and the host of the Suns Solar Panel podcast. So I'm excited to talk a little bit of Suns in this segment, and it probably seems a little odd anybody being excited to talk the Suns right now with the state of the franchise. And as I joked heading into this segment, it's Thanksgiving for the Suns. The tank is definitely on. The Suns have basically benched anybody of any use to the team. Last night in Atlanta, they even benched Devin Booker with an ankle injury. So it is pretty obvious what the Suns are trying to do right now. They are trying to position themselves for more lottery balls. And you know what? It's actually working, as they are now only a half a game back of the Los Angeles Lakers for the worst record in the Western Conference and the second worst record in the NBA. So we'll see. I have a feeling that the Lakers will hold on to that second spot. All they have to do, if the Suns lose the remaining seven games of the season, all the Lakers have to do is not win one themselves, and they'll hold it. And I think the Lakers are pretty good at doing that right now. If there's a team out there better than the Suns at tanking in the second half of this season, it's been the Los Angeles Lakers. And we won't even count the Brooklyn Nets, the worst team in the league, because they're tanking for some unbeknownst reason, since their pick is going to the Boston Celtics in this year's draft. So there's absolutely no benefit for them to lose their games, and yet they're still doing it. But for the Suns, it comes down to they want to get in the top three picks, and the top two likely with Lonzo Ball and Markelle Fultz, two point guards. And the Lonzo Ball pick, we've heard a lot from his dad, LeVar, and he came out again earlier this week. I actually think it was this morning on FS1. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, can't we say that every day he comes out and says something?
This is true. And surprise, surprise, it was on the Undisputed on Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, feed the animal.
No surprise. They'll happily put a mic in front of anybody that'll say anything stupid. And LeVar Ball is happy to do that as he went on to, again, double down on his explanation that he could beat Michael Jordan in his prime in a game of one-on-one because Michael Jordan wasn't a one-on-one player. I don't know about you, E, but I tend to remember Michael Jordan doing pretty well in isolation in the mid-90s against opponents, some of the best defenders in NBA history. So,
ask Byron Russell if Michael Jordan's a good one-on-one player.
I think everybody
or John Starks or any of the other dozens upon dozens of NBA defensive stars that he torched in his day.
Anybody? How about GCU head coach Dan?
There
Morley?
You go.
You could ask him, and we'll catch up with the vice president of athletics from GCU, Mike Vaught, in the next segment. But really, LeVar Ball's mouth is writing checks that his sons aren't going to be able to cash. He's saying that Lonzo is going to be the best player in the league, better than even LeBron. He's going out there and saying these things. And a lot of people are saying this shouldn't hurt his draft stock. If I'm Ryan McDonough and the Phoenix Suns front office, I don't touch Lonzo Ball with a 10-foot pole. Now, the other complaint about Lonzo is his jump shot. You can fix the way a guy's jump shot and the way he releases that jump shot. But one thing you're never going to change is his family. LeVar Ball will always be his father, and there will always be somebody, because let me let you in on a secret, having been in media for the past decade, there will always be somebody willing to stick a microphone in front of LeVar Ball's face, because he's going to say something ridiculous, and right now it's all about page views and audience. And that's the dirty little secret. So he's going to continue to say crazy things, and they're going to continue to print it and air it. And you know what? He's probably going to wind up with a reality show, too. That wouldn't shock me. And that's all going to be a distraction for a guy that you're hoping will be a superstar and a franchise changer in Lonzo Ball. And that's before we even get into the fact that you've got Eric Bledsoe, who's been a borderline all-star the last 2 years. And when he's healthy, he's one of the premier point guards in the entire league. If you draft a Lonzo Ball, or a Markel Fultz for that matter, you're saying it's time to move on from Eric Bledsoe. He doesn't fit our time frame, and you're going to deal him. I think that's a mistake, because at some point you can't wait another 4 or 5 years to make your window at winning happen. At some point, you're going to have to try to win in the present, and Eric Bledsoe is going to help you do that better than Lonzo Ball probably is going to, or Markel Fultz. It's going to take time for them to develop into NBA players. And then you start the clock on their rookie deal, and if we believe LeVar Ball, the place that Lonzo wants to play is the L.A. Lakers. Do you really want to step into that quagmire where you could lose the guy that you draft with a top two pick in 3 or 4 years when you supposedly feel that window is going to open and lose him to the Lakers? You don't want to go into that. I would stay away from it. I'd start looking at small forward, the Josh Jacksons of the world in this draft. Or, you know what I'm a big proponent of, if you wind up with a top two pick, maybe even a top three pick, you look at what deals are available, because this is one of the deepest drafts you're going to see in a very long time. So why not look at turning that draft pick into potentially multiple draft picks? Or a pick, say, later in the draft, and a young player. You want to be able to use these assets that you've accumulated over the last few years to make this team not only better for the future, but in the present. And if your goal is really to be a championship contender in 2020, you've got to open that playoff window in 2017 or 2018. You're going to have to make moves now to do that. I don't go after somebody with a dad like LeVar Ball.
I have a question for you. You would know this better than most, because you are a former Phoenix Suns employee. Mm-hmm. If you are Ryan McDonough and Robert Sarver, are you not only looking at Lonzo Ball for the potential of more butts in seats than you are games won? Because Lonzo Ball will put people in the stands to watch this team win or lose.
Well, two things. When I was an employee of the Phoenix Suns, I was nowhere in the tax bracket that either of those guys are. So it's going to take me a moment to get into that mental state. But if I'm them, No. Well, you know what puts people in the seats and puts butts in the seats? Winning freaking games.
But it's been so long since the Suns. I mean, Espo, when you think about it, the Suns have not been in the playoffs in almost 7 years.
Oh, I full well know. I worked five of those excruciating seasons, all right? I full well know how long it's been since the Phoenix Suns have been in the playoffs. The thing is, do you think that the Suns are going to sell out on Sunday after Devin Booker dropped 30 or 70 and it's the first time he's come home? No.
Nope.
They've got a guy that already can excite the fan base, a young guy that should be able to put butts in the seats. And guess what? He's not. So I don't think Lonzo Ball is the kind of guy that's going to be able to do it. The only thing that's going to get people in the seats at Talking Stick Resort Arena, which is still such a ridiculous name, we should just call it the Groot, but you'll get that joke later. Don't worry. But
I have no idea what you're talking about, but continue.
I don't think Lonzo Ball is going to put butts in the seats. Unless you win, and you win soon, you're not going to do that. That's why I think you look at either trading that pick or look at one of the guys not a point guard, because I think Eric Bledsoe can be an all-star next year. I think he can fill the point guard position well. I think he's helped Devin Booker grow this season in his second year. And then you add another piece at a different position. It's time to start moving these assets that you've accumulated, because if you look at the roster right now, this isn't a fully formulated roster that's going to be your future. You're still looking at a lot of young talent that you're holding on to in hopes of making a move. If you're going to do that this offseason, or if you're going to do that soon, I think you've got to do it this offseason and put that plan in place. Because Robert Sarver came out to a group of season ticket holders a few weeks ago and said 2020 is when we want to compete for a title.
Seems like a long time.
It's not that long, though,
I know,
if you look
just,
at it.
But, I mean,
but if you're competing,
just seems like so long.
But, look, if you're competing for a title in 2020, you got to be competing for the playoffs in the next few years. You don't go from lottery team to NBA Finals contender.
But it's not like the West is getting worse. That's the problem.
No, it's not.
I mean, the Suns are on this certain timeline. Guess what? All the other teams that are above the Suns, the fringe playoff teams, the 6 seeds, the 5 seeds, they're probably thinking the exact same thing of the Suns. And they're already steps closer to getting to that elusive NBA Finals appearance.
The best thing for the Suns is that they have one of the best young rosters in terms of potential in the entire NBA.
Potential. Healthy. All these asterisks.
Well, but that's everybody right now in the West that isn't the Spurs, the Rockets, or the Warriors.
Yep.
Everybody is potential and asterisks. So at some point, the Phoenix Suns are going to have to go in and move some of these assets and figure out what this young roster really is. I think they know Tyler Ulis is your backup point guard of the future. Devin Booker is obviously your shooting guard of the future. Now they need to figure out the Marquise Chris Dragan Bender. Who's a power forward? Is one of them a center? Is one of them just relegated to a backup? Do neither of them fit their long-term future? Who's your center of the future? Because it's probably not going to be Alex Len. I think he's gone after this year. And Alan Williams is nice. I love the double-doubles and the energy, but he's likely more of a backup guy as well. So the Suns have a lot of questions to figure out, and we're going to start to figure those out in May when those ping-pong balls actually come to fruition. The tank is on, and we'll see. If they lose the remaining 7 games of the season, they'll finish with 60 losses, only the second time in franchise history. The first was the inaugural season for the Suns. Plenty more coming up here on the Brad Sessmatt Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. As the Vice President of Athletics for GCU, Mike Vaught, joins us, we're going to talk about their basketball program, what Dan Marley's been able to do on that campus, what's coming up for them, and also the three-point and slam dunk contest for the NCAA that's going to be out there next week, or later this week. It is the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Greg Esposito, and we'll be right back. Welcome back into the Brad Sessmatt Show on AZ Central Sports and here on Sports360AZ.com. I am obviously not Brad Sessmatt. I'm a much better looking man. Brad is actually out. He is sick today, so I'm filling in for him, and really excited to welcome the Vice President of Athletics for Grand Canyon University, Mike Vaught, to the show. Mike, how are you today?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing well. A great weekend to be here in the Valley for sports, and you guys are playing a part in it. Before we get into that, though, I want to ask you about Dan Marley and the GCU basketball team. Obviously, a lot has been talked about the success that you guys have had. Going into next year, you guys will be eligible for the Big Dance. How have you felt that the program has proceeded or kind of gained momentum under Dan Marley?
Well, it's been fantastic. Dan and his staff have done a great job. You know, when you think about going through the four-year transition plan and you're recruiting young men that can't go to postseason play, it makes it a little difficult. And he's done a great job finding the right players, putting the right chemistry together. You know, last season, 27 wins, this past season, 22. And when you look at this past year, it may have been one of his best coaching jobs he's ever done because he lost three starters before the season even began to injuries. So he was shorthanded people all year and finished the year strong, you know, with a win at Cal Bakersfield. And they just got knocked out of the NIT semifinals last night, so they were a good ball club. So really pleased with the progress and really excited that Dan's leading our program.
You talked about recruiting. Going into next year, is there any big names that we should have our eyes open for coming to Dan Marley's team?
Well, I think Dan will have a good recruiting class. You know, it's really – he's in a position now with our facilities that are in place and the four-year transition coming to an end where we can go to the WAC tournament, we can go to postseason play, which is a bigger draw for recruits. You know, in the past, we've had to go internationally quite a bit because a lot of those international kids are just looking for an opportunity to play. And we got some great kids through that avenue, and I think as we progress forward now with opportunity to go to postseason play, you're going to see a few more local kids and West Coast kids scatter along his roster.
Well, you talked about that four-year plan, and this weekend we're seeing Gonzaga take part in the Final Four out in Glendale. How much did you look at their program and try to learn from it and build your program in a similar manner?
Yeah, I think when you're in a position we're in and going through the transition, you look at all the schools that have gone through the transition the past few years because there's a lot of similarities to the transition. You know, they've done a fantastic job there building their brand, building their program, getting national recognition. We're doing a lot of those same things and putting a lot of those same principles in place. We stepped out this last season and played Duke, Arizona, San Diego State, Penn State, some people, you know, some big-name schools. And that was to get our national brand out, to get people more aware of our program, to get more exposure on television, which also in turn helps recruiting. So a lot of those things that we've done, we didn't dream it up. Other people have used the same principles and ideas. It's kind of like that in our industry, like any other industry. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of schools that have gone through this process recently. It's done a fantastic job, and we're in a good spot in the process where we are right now with about 90 days left.
I've got to be honest. I have been thoroughly impressed with what you guys have been able to do in building that arena out there and the expansion with the upper deck. How important has that been to the growth of the program as well?
Well, I think it's real important. President Mueller, you know, the culture of this university, it all goes back to President Mueller, our leader. He's why I'm here. I think he's why Dan's here. The culture that's being created on our campus, that we all work together. It's collaborative. We all support each other. And, you know, our students show up for events. And when we have a basketball game, that arena is full. The atmosphere is incredible. It's impressive to high school kids coming in there looking at our program. And also for our current student athletes, getting to play in front of a home crowd like that each week, you know, with a passion and have that atmosphere and that home court advantage is really important. And we've gained national, you know, recognition through that this year for our university because we're trying to brand our university, not just our athletic department.
Well, one of the opportunities you're going to have to brand your university and the athletic department happens tomorrow night. It's the slam dunk and three-point shootout for the NCAA. How exciting is it to be able to host that, and how important is it to help build that brand?
Well, it's great. It's a great opportunity. We're excited about that. It's going to be a good crowd. It's a fun event. I don't know if you've ever been to it or not, but it's enjoyable to go to. You know, and it makes you feel good. I was watching one of the basketball games last night on ESPN, and they advertised that event at Grand Canyon University in Phoenix. So just that one little mention is great for our university, and I know all of our people on campus are excited to go to the game tomorrow night.
Looking back kind of at the Gonzaga model, when you see their success, is there something that they have been capable of doing to get them into the Final Four that you think that your program can do now that you're going to be tournament eligible as well?
Yeah, I think there's a strong commitment to athletics on their campus and the men's basketball program. We have that same commitment, that same passion, that same vision to be top 25 in everything we do. That's our vision for the athletic department. When we talk about top 25, we talk about winning championships, you know, competitiveness on the court and on the field, but we also want to be top 25 in fan experience, facilities, you know, how we cut the grass on our fields. That's our benchmark of where we want to be in all areas of everything we do. And I think Gonzaga, I think they do that. I think they've really got that in a place in their program that they strive for excellence every day just like we do. And that's really where they built their program from. It's incredible what their coach has done and what their administration has done with their basketball program there.
It's the Brad Sesmet Show here on Sports 360 AZ. Our guest is Mike Vaught, the Vice President of Athletics for GCU. And, Mike, we've spent a lot of time talking about basketball, but is there some other programs in your department that we should be keeping an eye on coming in into this next year?
Well, you know, we have 21 sports, and all of them are very competitive. Our softball team right now, over 20 wins. We actually play down at Arizona today, I believe. I'm getting ready to fly out of town, but they're down in Tucson. Their RPI is high. They would have actually been in postseason play last year with a very young team. Our track and field just won the WAC championship, men and women. Our swimming and diving has been ranked in the top 35. So we've got a lot of good things going on our campus. Our men's golf program is having a fantastic season. Our baseball season just started WAC play, and we had a sweep of Cal Bakersfield last weekend. And the thing that goes with all that, too, Greg, is the facilities that were put in place, the administration, our president, and support we're getting. We're doing the 10-2 campaign, as you might be aware of. We're constructing 10 facilities in 2 years. I think we have 7 of them complete. So we're going to have great facilities, which helps great recruits, which helps wins. It all kind of trickles together. So if I'm a fan, come over to GCU any time of the year, and you'll enjoy watching some great student athletes and some great competition in any of our sports.
Well, I got to tell you, I mentioned the basketball facility, but the soccer stadium as well, a beautiful facility. You mentioned there's three more on the horizon. What additional venues are you guys working on out there?
As soon as baseball season ends, we'll start construction of a new baseball stadium. That'll be ready for next season. There's enough window time there to get that completed, and it's going to be beautiful. It'll be in the same location, but it'll be a new stadium facility for our fans and our students. Also, we just started this past week. We're expanding our sports medicine facility, our strength and conditioning facility. That will be ready in August. And we finished the competition area of our softball complex. The field, dugouts, all the playing competition areas, that's complete. We're using that now. We had to put temporary seats in for the season. So when the season's over, we'll go back and build the stadium for the softball fans, and that will be a very comfortable, great venue. With the idea, all the venues we're building, all the facilities we're putting in place, meet specifications to host NCAA events. So that's kind of what we're shooting for. We want to be able to host NCAA postseason here on our campus in a great city.
Well, Mike, if fans want to keep up to date on everything going on in your athletic department, including the renovations on those buildings, what's the best place to go? What website or where would you suggest?
Yeah, GCULUPS.com, and I think that's a great place to look at our facilities. We've got a new updated site coming out here in the next couple of months. It's really going to be nice. And then you can follow me on Twitter at GCU_ED. Post a lot of pictures as I move around campus and give you a little insight behind the scenes there also.
Are you going to get a chance to go out and check out any of the Final Four this weekend?
I'll be watching some basketball this weekend. I'll be back in town for that. It's fantastic for our city. Those events it's amazing the national exposure. And since I've lived in Phoenix, we've had the national championship football game, a lot of big events. And this city does a great job hosting those events. Don Rogers and her group's done a great job with the Final Four. We partnered with them on some of the things this week. They're great to work with, and it's just going to be a fantastic weekend for our city and for our state.
How much do those big events actually help you guys build that GCU brand that you talked about, that being so important for you guys?
Well, just one of the examples, you know, we talked about the game tomorrow night. That's going to be on TV for probably an hour, hour and a half, and our logo is going to be in the middle of the floor. So that just having that event in our arena is great exposure for our university. And, you know, the other thing about having the event here, all the other coaches, all the other administrators, a lot of college basketball fans come to Arizona for this weekend and this week, kind of like spring training. A lot of people come to this area and just play our golf course, for example, and find out what a great facility we have at our GCU golf course. And then they swing by campus and see the campus and you know, usually don't know how big the campus is. They don't realize we have 17,000 students and the infrastructure that's been built there. So it's a great tool for exposure for us as a university this week.
All right, and before I let you go, Mike, your point guard, Dwayne Russell, is actually going to be taking part in the three-point contest. How do you think Dwayne's going to fare tomorrow night?
I hope he does great. He's a great young man. You know, he's a person that we need to thank, along with all the other seniors this year and all of our sports, because those kids came here, saw the vision. They helped build the foundation, you know, to where we're going, knowing they couldn't go to postseason play the whole time they were, you know, here at GCU. So we want to thank all those guys, and Dwayne's one of the leaders in that group. Hope he does great tomorrow night. We're pulling for him.
Well, he's got the right coach. Dan Marley is a guy that definitely can help a guy prepare for a three-point contest. So, Mike, really appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you here in the future.
Craig, thanks a bunch. Have a great week.
Yeah. So that was Mike Vaught, the Vice President of Athletics for GCU. Coming up here on the Brad Sesmat Show, we're going to talk about the Vegas Raiders and Las Vegas as a potential threat to Phoenix. All that, much more, coming up here on the Brad Sesmat Show. It's the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports. I am not Brad Sesmat. I am Greg Esposito, columnist here at Sports360AZ.com and host of the Sun Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast where we get into everything Phoenix Suns. Check it out on iTunes and on SunsPodcast.com, which will actually take you back to Sports360AZ.com. I saw the Rockin' Refuel ad in the break. I could really use one of those because after with a newborn, I didn't realize how tough an hour on the stream would actually be.
You see, you look right in front of you. There's a fridge right there, and there's a lot of Rockin' Refuel in there. One problem, the fridge is not plugged in, and those Rockin' Refuel bottles are not full because you wouldn't want an unplugged refrigerator with milk products.
Well, see, next time, have one of those bad boys
ready.
I'll
do what I can.
Let's get into it. It's time, as you can see behind me, we have gone to the Las Vegas Strip. It's time to talk about Vegas, baby. Vegas. And a lot of things have been happening in Vegas. That's always the case, but more than usual with the sports world. As earlier this year, the NHL announced that the Las Vegas Knights are going to be there. I wish they were the Dark Knights with Batman as their logo, but
yeah, they missed on the nickname, but that's okay.
They missed on the name in general. Yeah. There were a lot of great names you could have went with Vegas. I thought the Dealers would be great, personally, but then the NFL this week voted to allow the Oakland Raiders to move to Las Vegas in 3 years. And earlier today on Sports360AZ.com, actually I think it was late last night on Sports360AZ.com, Brad, before he got sick, wrote an interesting piece about how Phoenix needs to be weary of Las Vegas getting into the major sports scene because we now have competition for all these major events. We've got the Final Four here this weekend, and with a new NFL stadium being built in Las Vegas, they're going to be on the radar for that. You've got the new T-Mobile Arena where the NHL team will play, and also where the Pac-12 tournament has been or was this year. I really think Brad's on to something here. I think that we're going to lose major events from Phoenix to the Vegas market, because in your right mind, why would you host an event, and this is going to get me in trouble with my fellow Phoenicians, and I'm a Valley resident for most of my life, the last 32 years. and I love Phoenix, but if you have the option to hold your major sporting event in Las Vegas or in Phoenix, where do you host it? 9 times out of 10, I choose Vegas, because you're going to attract the somewhat fans, that the half-hearted fans of your league and your sport, because it's in Vegas. You can spend an entire weekend in Vegas, and the sporting event will just be part of it. The Final Four would just be part of it. You know, the NCAA regional finals would be part of it. And if you look at it, the Pac-12's already hosting their conference finals there, their conference tournament there.
As are several other conferences, the WAC, the Mountain West.
But the thing in terms of the Pac-12 that's interesting to me, they tried it in L.A. for years. They moved it to Vegas. Doesn't really seem like Glendale and the Phoenix market were heavily considered for the Pac-12 tournament. The interesting thing, no Pac-12 team in Las Vegas. Not any team. Now you could say, oh, well, they did it so it's a neutral site. No, they did it because you know where college kids and alumni of universities want to go? They want to go to Vegas. They want to spend a weekend in the casinos, at the clubs, and watching basketball. It's the same reason that the NBA Summer League in the heat of summer in July is in Las Vegas, because it gives an additional reason for people to show up. And if I'm the Final Four, if I'm the Super Bowl, if I'm any of these major events, I choose Vegas over Phoenix every time. Hotels are there, obviously. They've got that. They've got nightlife. And they're going to have the venues now. Why would you pick Phoenix over Las Vegas?
Yeah, I mentioned this yesterday on the show. One thing that I think in the grand scheme of things is a big win for Vegas. When the national championship in football was here, where were most of the ESPN talent stationed? They were stationed in Old Town Scottsdale. Yeah. Where were most of the big events? They were in downtown Phoenix. Where was the game? The game was in Glendale. So in our vast valley of the sun, pun intended, you had all these different locations, none of which were really convenient to the other. Nope. With Las Vegas, they're going to build this Raiders stadium, which looks amazing if you've seen any of the drawings or the pictures of it. They're going to plop that right off the strip. Well, there's enough room around the strip, particularly on the south end, where they can put all of what you need within a nice 1 to 2 mile radius. Uh-huh. It's all right there. And like you said, they have the hotels, Espo, dozens upon dozens of nice places. I think I'm excited that there is going to be the NFL in Vegas, but I do see your point about how this could cost our economy quite a bit of money.
Well, and you mentioned the football stadium, but the hockey and basketball arena is right on the strip too.
It's
right behind New York, New York.
Yep.
Vegas is building an entire new entertainment economy for themselves there, and you bring up the great point. All the Final Four teams, where are they staying this weekend? They're staying in downtown Phoenix. Not exactly easily accessible to the arena to the stadium in Glendale for practices and all these different things. You mentioned ESPN during Super Bowl was in Scottsdale. If you don't have that centralized location, and this comes down to I think Phoenix screwed up not only, you know, we always talk about the Coyotes arena being a mess up, being out in the West Valley, but putting that football stadium all the way on the West Valley, sure, it works great for Cardinals. You have one game every Sunday for 8 weeks out of the year, 10 weeks out of the year, but they could have put it downtown. When they talked about the fairgrounds being a realistic place for that stadium, that's where it should have been. You could have had everything you needed for the downtown sports fan and for these major events.
Yeah, or the 202-101 where you saw the pop-up soccer stadium. I mean, from Tempe to downtown, that's nothing. But when you're talking about from trying to get downtown Phoenix all the way out to UOP, that's a completely different story.
Yeah, the PHX Rising got a prime piece of real estate there, not only for their pop-up stadium, but if they get the calls in the MLS and they build that permanent venue, they've got probably the best piece of land out of any of these teams to build a stadium, because you're in a great area. It's fantastic. You're right. That probably should have been also where the football stadium should have been, but unfortunately the FAA got in the way with flight patterns. That caused an issue there. So, yeah, Vegas is coming, people, And what happens in Vegas ain't going to stay in Vegas when it comes to sports. It's going to invade your backyard and likely take some of these major events. I want to thank Eric Sorensen behind the glass. He always a pleasure to fill in and work
nice
with
job, Espo. Nice
yeah,
job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I want to thank the Vice President of Athletics from GCU, Mike Vaught. Not to be confused with Mo Vaughn. I almost made that mistake earlier. I am Greg Esposito, Sports 360 AZ columnist here. Make sure to check out the Sun Solar Panel and all our written pieces. And Brad, hopefully you'll be back tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the Brad Sesmatch Show.